Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're going to learn today.
Innovate like a startup. Deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeeed up and ready because it's going to be a great day.
I know you're going to dig this.
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Lero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 158. My name is Pete Fletcher, and joining me today as co-host is Miles Gray. Miles, how you doing, buddy?
Doing good, Pete. Excited to talk some multi-reader, multi-writer goodness.
Yeah. So you may be wondering, hey, where's John, right? Well, he's here, but John is not co-host today. He's actually one of our guests because we're talking, you got it, file services. And this is something that John and I have been working on for a little bit. So John, as guest of the podcast, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me on, Pete. It's a little weird.
Long time, first time?
Yeah.
Yeah. Miles, thanks for joining us. This is going to be a good conversation. As many of you know, vSphere 7 came out and lots of great new features that are part of that release, one of which is vSAN file services. And we're going to get into this, but there are two main workloads we see for vSAN file services. The first one are cloud native workloads, and that's why we have Miles on to discuss that part. But then John's going to cover the traditional workloads. So John, how you doing, man?
I'm caffeinated up. I'm ready to crush some files. I'm trying to clean up this like desk. There's just paper everywhere and I need to find a place for it. So
a shredder.
Yeah, good call. I don't need a file cabinet. I need a shredder. I like that.
Yeah. I like it. Awesome.
You're using paper, you're doing it wrong. This is the 21st century, man.
Miles, it comes in the mail, or as I like to call it, physical spam.
Yeah, exactly. So, John, file services is clearly not a new concept to many folks in infrastructure, but new in the case of vSAN. So why don't you give us the high level? What is vSAN file services? What does it look like?
Okay, so first off, let's talk about what those services are. And so those services today are NFS v3 and v4.1. And so, you know, worth noting on v4.1, what that includes and doesn't. So if you're looking for like PNFS or anything weird, no, that's not in the 4.1 spec. Stop asking me about it. It does have IPACLs for locking down. So from a security perspective, you're using that. Kerberos is not yet there. It does not include SIF support, which I've been asked about a few dozen times and wrote a fairly snarky blog saying that SIFs is not a thing. And myself and Ned over at Microsoft will hunt you down if you keep using the word SIFs.
I love triggering John with SIFs. It's great.
Yeah, no, but you did this on a call the other day, and I'm like, I'm going to kill. There's got to be a way to kill someone or slap someone over Zoom. But no, this is a distributed file service layer that's resilient, as well as also it scales out, so you can utilize multiple hosts for performance. As you add shares, it'll scale out.
All right. So to the vSAN administrator, what does this look like? What do I do?
So within your vCenter, you go to the vSAN configuration section and you set this up. Some requirements you're going to have. You're going to need a network to place this on. You will, for the various protocol endpoint containers, you're going to need an IP address and forward and reverse DNS. Some people I know forget that, so make sure you got your PTR records all sorted out. And once you finish this, it's going to go out and it's going to spin up these services across the cluster. The resource overhead is pretty reasonable in terms of CPU and memory. It doesn't hard reserve this, so it's going to scale based on usage.
Okay, so you said resources across the cluster. So this is are you talking about the little containers that it makes that it puts on each of the hosts in the cluster?
Yeah, so I mean, this is kind of implementation details, and I will give a giant disclaimer. This is subject to change. But currently how this is working is that they're basically containers. They're Docker images, if you really care that much, that are spun up one on each host. So you'll see a little FSVM, and that's basically a container host that's running. Note, this is kind of not necessarily intuitive, but it's the container that's grabbing that IP address in DNS. It is not the container host. Container host is kind of a stateless thing that's just doing a pass-through on the networking. It doesn't actually listen on the network. So from a security baseline, one thing is you know, looking at those containers, because I kind of came in from the outside initially. I didn't go read all the engineering docs, and I ran an Nmap against them. I'm like, oh, so, you know, what are these things using to communicate with each other? And what I found was is that the only ports that were open were just those used for NFS. So I got really confused and was like, how are these talking to each other? And starting to dig into it, they actually talk through the hypervisor. And so the configuration and things like that, some of that's done using a combination of VM tools, but also a VMCI connection, which is this kind of cool, it presents as like a PCI Express direct connection to the guests. And so a common kind of mistake that I've seen some people make when looking at file services, they're like, oh, what's the IO path for the storage? Is it, you know, are they clustered networking? Are they shared VMDKs? You know, like you would cluster a normal Windows file server, or is this like Gluster or Ceph or something, some scale out system to where there's, you know, every time a file gets read and it then replicates to its other networking peers, it neither. So
okay.
vSAN is the layer of which the underlying file system gets written against. The SPVM policies follow that share. But the IO path that's kind of different here is it actually is, it's a hypervisor transport. So basically, rather than go speak Ethernet back to a VM kernel port or something, or use VMDKs bolted onto those container hosts and use the vSCSI path, instead it's basically going straight into the hypervisor. And then the actual file system layer runs there, and that's what interacts with vSAN.
So you were saying there, like, no Ethernet, no, you know, communication between hosts from that layer. Does that mean that there's no network hop between these things? Like, how does it communicate directly with the storage that's on the hosts, or does it have to go over the network, or, you know, what's going on there?
So if you had a remote read, so like the actual vSAN component was remote, you would have a remote read, obviously, would happen, or a write mirror still has to happen. All writes that are protected have to end up on multiple hosts. But that's all done at the vSAN layer. So basically, that container host, it's punching through into the hypervisor, talking to the file system layer. That file system is going to be basically owned and mounted by one of the containers. And as you spin up more shares, you'll get more file systems. But its access point is going to be local to that host. So yeah, that is not a remote IO path or anything. That NFS comes in, and then it's going to punch down into that layer, which will then go talk to that. And rather than you have to manage VMDKs, the file system layer, VDFS, is actually instead mounting those objects and handling that. And whenever a share grows, they're thin by default, you know, like all traditional filers, when it grows and hits that 255 gigabyte point of our max component size, it actually goes and concatenates another object on. And so it's just going to sit there and keep striping and concatenating objects into that file system. So you don't have to handle the growth. You do have quotas, so you can say, you know, this share can't exceed, you know, 100 terabytes or something to prevent, you know, accountants gone wild and them, you know, make 4 bazillion copies of their spreadsheets or something. Yeah. And run you out of space. But it will basically dynamically grow and handle that. And yeah, that IO path is very clean. I mean, there's no hairpinning. There's no, you know, this file server talks to a storage array or an iSCSI endpoint or a VMD. It's not going to, this is a really clean IO path. And part of that is to try to keep the CPU and the network traffic to a minimum. So the overhead of adding the service is very efficient.
So I heard you mention VDFS there, and that's not VMFS or NFS or any of these other file systems that we're already familiar with when it comes to VMware. So what is VDFS? Is it an open source thing? Does it use open source stuff in the back end? How does it work? Just what is it?
So it's ZFS on that. No, I'm kidding. So VDFS, I've actually got a blog that kind of talks through, if you go to the nicholson.com, it's called Understanding File System Architectures. And I kind of wanted to lay out what were the different classes of file system, things like shared disk, clustered file systems. So if we look at some of the other, kind of provide some context, we have other file systems at VMware. We have VMFS. I would argue one of the greatest clustered file systems ever created. It was specifically designed for, you know, larger files, VMDKs. It has concurrent access, particularly once we hit the vSphere 5 timeline where we got ATS. It scales pretty well. We've got vVols, which is not a file system really at all. It's more of a pass-through. We've got VMFS-L, the local variant, which is not necessarily always known, but it's actually used on boot devices and things like that. It was used in the early days of ESAN, which is kind of cool. It's basically designed for direct attach storage. VDFS is a distributed file system. So this is vSAN virtual distributed file system. And this is a distributed file system that sits inside the hypervisor directly and with the vSAN objects providing a block backed end. This is not anything open source. This is not, you know, ext4. This is not ZFS. And this is something that it's got some pretty good performance for, particularly for streaming workloads, your larger block. It's doing pretty well. We're going to be evolving this and adding other capabilities. Kind of why did we go down this path? One thing was scaling. If you look at your ext4s and things like that, I'm not comfortable with those scaling up to a petabyte or using a full cluster. VDFS was designed for very large scale. It's been around quite a while. Some of the other intentions also with it, though, were being able to bake it into the hypervisor and things like that. Running bits of it within kernel space, you're obviously not going to be using any GPL code for that.
That makes sense. Yeah, that's awesome. So we dove straight into architecture, but maybe we can back up a little bit and say, you know, for the administrator that just turns on the service and starts to, you know, want to use file services, what are some of the use cases and what are some of the ways that they can actually start to take advantage of file services?
So there's kind of two initial use cases, and this will grow over time. Kind of like vSAN, you know, started kind of humble with VDI and test dev, and we spiraled out, and now people run Oracle Rack and SAP and whatnot.
Yeah.
One of the initial use cases is there's a lot of kind of infrastructure related shares where NFS is useful. Some of them may be basic things like just backing up your vCenter server or log locations. There's a blog someone did for VMware Cloud Director where if you're running multiple VMware Cloud Director front ends, use an NFS share for them to communicate and store some common data in. Image repositories, things like that. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why you would have an NFS share in your environment. No, note, NFS is not consumed by Windows today. Well, not normally. The NFS stack in Windows is generally viewed as subpar and a fourth-class citizen at Microsoft. So we would have to wait for a, you know, in the future, something like a proper SMB implementation really to go down that route.
Yeah.
The other one, which I'll probably defer to Miles here on, is the what we call the cloud native, which is the, you know, the DevOps hipster container kids, their use case. Miles, can you speak to that?
Sure. Yeah. So as the representative hipster container kid over here, apparently.
Yeah. What were you drooling over on Hacker News this morning? What new NoSQL database are you already spinning up on your?
It's a NoSQL database that runs in a unikernel. It's the future, man.
Unikernels.
So from a cloud native perspective, the way that this would be used is similar to the way that you would use block volumes when it comes to like SQL FCI, where you share one between multiple instances of an application. But rather than relying on SCSI protocols and trying to do SCSI 2 persistent reservations and block reservations and all that kind of locking, you just let the protocol do it itself because NFS has that file locking built in. So whenever you're using a cloud native application that wants to scale out natively, think like your Nginx, your Tomcat, Apache, web servers, application servers, Jenkins, build servers, that kind of stuff, you'll have typically many front-end workers and they all mount a single volume. And simply just because if you update the files in one place, it's updated across all of those front ends. And not just that, there's like a deduplication benefit as well, if you think about it. So if you have 10 web server front ends there, you could have 10 copies of the file and it would serve the same thing. Or you could just have one copy in an NFS share and serve it to 10 of the containers at the same time, and you're making an effective deduplication of 10 to 1 on that data, right? So there's plenty of use cases from a CNA perspective there.
Back in the day when I was managing some IIS farms, which I know, I don't think any, you know, self-respecting hipster would be running that at scale. But yeah, you would end up with like 15 front-end servers with a load balancer. And every time you would update the site, you would have to have some script that would sit there and copy it to all of these. And that's something that could break, or it could be slow, or it could have some type of problem. And people are like, wait, I'm testing it and the test isn't changed. He's like, hold on, that script runs every 10 minutes. Let me go check, or let me go run the script. I forgot to run the copy script. Like this is a common problem in workflow.
That was job
security. Or worse, like the sync would get out of sync on one, so one out of 15 connections would be an old version of the site was another issue. The Jenkins and the CI/CD pipeline use case is interesting because we actually have some Jenkins internally in our lab. Mm-hmm. And that was something I was previously trying to request from TechOps, was get us an NFS share. So that way we could have a common place to dump all the images and things like that. So
yeah.
And here we are just spinning one up on our newly upgraded 7.0 lab so we can do it ourselves.
So sexy.
I love our IT people, but if I don't have to open a ticket and I can just go do this as a VMware admin, that'll speed things up.
Yeah, for sure. So Miles, the DevOps hipsters, you know, of course they want to have these read, write many volumes, but I don't think they want to go into vCenter to create them, do they?
No, absolutely not. They want nothing to do with VMware as a platform. You know, they just want to throw stuff at Kubernetes and have it work. And frankly, I think that's the right way to do things. You should let the application define what it needs, right? So you shouldn't have to go into the platform and say, oh, hang on, let me spin up an NFS share. You should just say, I want a read-write many volume that's 10 gigs in size, and you should get one back. And that's what we built with CNS and the file services integration in 7.0 is, if you have an application that requires one of these types of read-write many volumes, it's just the same as any other Kubernetes volume. You just send it to Kubernetes, say, give me a volume, 100 gigs in size, vSAN file services automatically creates the share on the back end, mounts it into all the containers. Simple as you like.
And so the administrator has the governance still, because they're able to manage this with policies and things like that?
Absolutely. So it's still all SPVM policy based. It's all exposed in the CNS UI and in the file services UI that's within vCenter as well, because obviously there's one of those because you need to be able to manage this stuff. You'll see your container file services volumes split out from your regular file services volumes. So you'll see, you know, exactly what's being consumed where, who's using it, what applications it's being used for. That's all just part of the solution.
So Miles, I know that, you know, CNS came out for vSAN in 6.7.u3, but obviously we didn't have file services back then. So what is some of the difference if someone was trying to use cloud native storage in 6.7.u3 compared to what's now in 7?
Yeah, so 7 has a couple of improvements, obviously, that we're always updating the CSI driver. The UI gets some updates in the 7.0 vCenter as well, which are quite nice. The way that we do labels and filtering is a bit more intuitive. It's easier to use. But from like a functionality perspective, in 6.7.u3, we only had support for block container volumes, so VMDKs. In 7.0, we've now got automatic provisioning of vSAN file services shares, so we can do read-write many volumes for Kubernetes apps as well. And the nice thing about this is, even if you install the 2.0 CSI driver, which you can do on 6.7.u3, it'll gracefully degrade and say, hey, we don't actually support that in this version. You need to upgrade vSphere in order to support that. So you can install the later versions of the CSI, but it'll gracefully regress down to the functionality that was supported there.
Oh, okay.
It's always nice when you don't have to align the star charts of like versions and drivers across things. And
everyone loves a compatibility matrix.
For sure.
It's what I put on the walls. Like, I've got posters of like, ooh, I wonder if this subversion works with this subversion.
Whenever I was back at the MSP, before we did any upgrade, we would have to build out a full compatibility matrix of the hardware. So we were using UCS, the hardware, each, you know, individual component, what firmware level were they at? What was the driver in vSphere? What version of vSphere? And make all of these stars align. And then only when that happened, could you look at, oh, maybe we can upgrade, you know, vCloud Director now. So it was this whole massive pain.
Oh, VCD is way down that list. I've done, mm-hmm. I managed a VCD environment and it's...
at the end.
All right, well, back to you, John, real quick. So I know we mentioned that in CNS, you can apply some IT governance using storage policies. But what if I have a virtual machine and my administrator wants to mount an NFS volume inside of that VM? Is there any governance with those as well?
So from a governance perspective, we've got a couple things. So first off, within file services, we have quotas. So we have a soft quota, which will generate an alarm. And, you know, that is basically like, hey, this is starting to run out of space, or, you know, maybe we need to have a conversation, or maybe we need to ask some people to clean up, you know, their spreadsheets or whatever they're throwing out into my beautiful file share.
Yeah.
And then we also have a hard quota, of which case we will stop the write and tell you to go away. And so that prevents some out of control log process from completely filling up a volume, etc. Now, the other things we have with SPBM is we can also say we can set different data protection policies. So we can do everything from, you know, RAID 5, RAID 6, stretch clustering. You can put an IOP limit on this, so that way it prevents excessive performance coming out of it. You can set stripes. So we've got all of our existing policies. We also have security of access to this. And you can set these policies and all of this and the security access on it on a per share basis. So that way you could have one share that's maybe servicing logs for a core infrastructure, and you can have another share that's serving the containers in the front end, and you can isolate and have completely different protection and other capabilities between them.
So I'm really smart, John, and I would like to mount this NFS share into another vSphere cluster. Can I do that?
No. Oddly enough, the vSphere and ESXi is the only client and hypervisor that we don't support.
Hear that, folks? Do not put your VMs on the NFS file share served by this. You're going to have a bad time.
I will find you. I have a Nerf bat. Like, you can buy this like Nerf war axe, and I will hunt you down if you try.
Why would somebody do that anyway, though? I don't understand. You have a nice, pretty vSAN cluster already serving block. You've got your data stores there.
So I think the...
The art of the possible is what it is, Pete.
Yeah, the art of the possible. I think the like misguided conception there is like, well, I'm going to try to sling space between clusters. If that's something we address in the future, it will not be iSCSI and it will not be NFS. I said it before with iSCSI, I'll say it again with NFS. If we ever end up going down that path, this is not how we'll do it.
Fair enough. All right, last question I have for you guys, and this is for both of you, but data protection. How do we protect these file shares?
So NFS, I like to remind people that I think, you know, NFS itself is older than I am. And NFS v3, I think, has been like a locked RFC standard since 1994. There's a lot of backup products that are out there that will back up NFS shares. I was actually talking to Veeam yesterday. They have it in their lab. They just had released a new NFS thing they're using. But, you know, you go, whoever you're using, NetBackup, Networker, Commvault, whatever, Rubrik, Cohesity, all of the cats, yep. They all can pretty much go talk to whoever they are and say, hey, do you have anything that can crawl a file share? I know within the filer space, there's NDMP, which is this weird pseudo like block backup where you strip the whole file system in. I think that might have made sense when you were doing like streaming tape exports on log structured filers on magnetic disks back in the Stone Ages. We're not doing NDMP. Frankly, I think NDMP at this day and age is kind of stupid because it's... You're not backing it up in a format that you can recover cleanly to something different without being able to mount that proprietary file system. So no, just get a high-speed NFS crawler, talk to your backup vendors. They'll cover you there. But backing up the shared volumes does have some additional concerns. Miles, what are you hipster DevOps kids doing there?
Yeah, it's a little bit different with containers and Kates. You can't just back up the data. That's not enough to protect the application. You need to back up the application state as well. And by that, I mean the application, the way it's deployed into Kubernetes, whatever state it's in at the point that the backup is taken is important for whenever you go to restore it. So say you've got three front ends whenever you back it up, and you go to restore it, and suddenly you forget, and there's only one that gets restored back, right? That's going to be a bad time. So we need to back up both the data, so the stuff that's on the NFS shares, and the manifests that are in Kubernetes as well. And we have an answer for that. And we did a bunch of podcasts on this in the past that Pete will throw down in the show notes on Valero.
Yep.
And basically, you can use Valero with the built-in RESTIC worker, and it'll just read the files off the file system like anything else. So it'll take all the manifests of the Kubernetes cluster and read all the files off the file system as well. So it really doesn't matter what the backend is, whether it's NFS or VMDK or whatever, Valero will still protect all of your cloud native apps that are using this service too.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I will, yeah, we did a great podcast on Valero a couple of months back. So I'll be sure to add that to the show notes. Good stuff. Yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, NFS is not that new. Even NFS v4.1 is from the early 2000s. These are fairly, you know, someone asked me, like, do we have a compatibility list? I'm like, why? Like, if it doesn't, you know, these are fairly boring RFCs. There's not a lot of weird extended, you know, it's not like you're doing RDMA or anything sexy here. So this is something that, you know, should be scalable. It should just work. And it should be easy to manage. And that's really where we're at today.
Yeah, I like it. I did say that was the last one, but I do have one more, and that's performance. Is there any performance penalty for using file services?
So I don't have like a detailed like, you know, benchmark breakdown or anything here. What I will say is just talking to the Perfinj guys on larger streaming workloads, which is frankly a lot of what you see with, you know, large file actions and things like that. The performance was pretty similar just to the base vSAN. There is a, I guess, in theory, a wall you'll hit on a single share. So creating more shares will get you a little better performance. But most of the use cases that people are using file services for are not super performance intensive. If you're trying to run like, you know, a million IOPS of tiny IO over NFS, like, yeah. No, don't put your Oracle databases here. Like, that's not what this is for. Yeah. You know, I'm guessing, use block, attach a VMDK to your VM, you know, call it a day.
Yeah, for sure. I'm guessing that you can actually see the performance inside of Skyline Health.
So it's with the vSAN performance service does include NFS stats. So you can see latency, IOPS, you know, whatnot, the usual stats for the file per share, which is pretty cool. And then also from a health perspective, like service health, like is the underlying or the front end, you know, protocol endpoints reporting in, are the lower level, like the kernel modules and stuff like that for VDFS, are they running on a host? That is actually all visible. You can also see, so this is kind of weird, you can have a maximum of 8 containers and it'll balance the shares across them. But if you have a cluster that's larger than that, you'll actually have a container, one of these container hosts on all of them. So if you want to see where a container is running, like where this IP address is currently listening, you actually, within the just built-in vSAN, the Skyline Health, you can see where those containers are currently located. Duncan, I think, did some blogs talking about, you know, kind of some of the behaviors of fail and fail back and stuff like that. But this is something where, yeah, there is some visibility there. Are you going to SSH into that and go like pick through the container to try? No, like this is, those things are very much, you know, they are cattle, not pets. In fact, the upgrade actions, which are within there, you can actually upgrade the whole service within vCenter. It'll phone home and grab a new package, or if you're air-gapped, you deploy that. It's just an OVA that caches on the vCenter server. But the upgrade action is a destructive one. It's, okay, let's shoot this one on this host, replace it with a new, and just roll through.
Perfect, yeah. Well, yeah, as you mentioned, there's good content out there. Duncan did some stuff, but Miles wrote a lot of great content, did some demos as well. We got some feature and fives. John, you yourself, you've been writing some great content. So yeah, lots of good information.
I've got some blogs. If you go to thenicholson.com, one also explains like how the namespace works. So if you're using NFS 4.1, you can basically have a single namespace, which is global namespace or DFS type functionality, to where you can have different shares off of that and you connect to a master IP address, and then NFS v4 will actually redirect you where you need to go. It doesn't proxy the traffic, which is kind of cool. And I explain through that and some other things.
Perfect. Yeah, I will add all of those links to the show notes of this podcast. Last question for you. John, how did you like being a guest on the podcast?
It's weird, Pete. I don't like it. I don't like it at all. No. No, it was great. You know, honestly, it's always an honor being invited on the podcast. Yeah, and yeah. It's kind of sad when the last podcast you're invited to is your own. But, you know, it's good. It's good.
No, that's good. Miles, I'm glad you're able to join us as a part co-host, part guest. I know you've got a lot to contribute as it pertains to the whole CNS and the DevOps hipsters, as John refers to it. So I appreciate you helping out on this one. John, thanks for being a great guest this week, and we'll see you next week when you're a co-host again. All right, well, that music tells me it's time to go. And so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. You can subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice by searching Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can catch this and all episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. Big thanks to Miles and John for joining us this week and talking some file services. We're back next week, but until then, bye for now.
Enough of this jibber jabber.